Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Bronwyn Healy had a dream start in life and today is in a great place. It's the bit in the middle that was a shocker. Raised by loving parents, she attended a private girls' school. You take a snapshot of her then and you'd think she had it all, and she did. But within a couple of years, she was riding what she calls the wild animal that needed to be fed heroin on the streets as a prostitute. It is quite a story, especially when you see where she is today. Bronwyn Healy, welcome to Open House.
Hey Lee, how you going?
Great to have you here tonight.
Thank you.
It was a dream start for you early in your life, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I was a normal kid. Had two parents that loved me and life was good.
Take that snapshot of you then. Where did you think you'd head?
I was going to make movies and go to Hollywood. And if I wasn't going to do that, I was actually going to be a radio news journalist.
We should swap mics.
I know.
We'll give you an audition.
There we go.
So life was good.
Yeah, it was.
How did it start to unravel?
I basically got to the very end of grade 12 as a 16-year-old and had swapped schools to pursue film and media. And at this new school, there was lots of drugs. I'd gone from an elite private girls' school to this new school and got all the way to the end of grade 12 when someone offered me some pot after having offered it to me every day when I'd said no. And I thought, you know what? I know I've got the grades to get to uni. I deserve a treat. And In those days, I didn't know that a treat was getting your hair done or going to gold class cinema or, you know, laying on the beach on your own reading a book. And they offered me pot and I said yes.
Why had you said no in the past? And what was it? Was it just that I deserve this, a treat, that tipped you over?
I'd said no in the past because in my mind, I am a visionary and I am a dreamer. And I always have been. And I wanted to make movies and go to Hollywood. And I knew that to pursue that goal and that dream, there was steps that I was going to have to take to get there. And getting good grades and getting to university was going to be one of, you know, some of those steps. So I'd said no to pot because I'd watched what pot had done to my friends.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, I don't want to have a fried brain and try and study and get to university. So, yeah, all the way to the end, you know.
But as is so often the case, one thing leads to another, and it did for you.
Yeah, I always say to people, you know, I do a lot of stuff in schools and youth groups, and I just say at the age of 16 when I tried marijuana, I never thought, you know, oh, gee, I hope by the time I'm 21 I can be a messed up heroin addicted prostitute. I just didn't realise the power of choice, and I didn't realise that every choice had a consequence, and I just thought I was all that, and I thought I had it all together.
How long into that period of time did you lose that choice, do you think?
I think pretty quickly. I'm a bit of a go-getter.
Yes, I've gathered that already.
I don't know if you can tell. So I very quickly kind of got bored of pot and I just thought, I'm not getting the high that I got when I first tried it and I'm going to try something else. So within those holidays from the end of grade 12 to the start of university, I tried acid and speed and ecstasy and I drank too much alcohol and I partied too much. And I say, you know, I think the government should consider creating an island to just send all children that finish grade 12 until the day they start university and just send them all there, kind of like massive survivor, and just get them away from reality. Yeah. Only because we see the trauma that those months cause.
But you wanted to do it.
Yeah, I did. I just was like, well, it's party time now. You know, I've got the grades to get to uni. I'm heading towards my dream of making movies and going to Hollywood. And, I'm all that. I just thought I had it all together. And I didn't think that the drugs would control me. I thought in my mind, these are like weekend party drugs. By the time I got to university 4 months later, my weekends weren't Friday night to Sunday night anymore. They were Thursday night to Sunday night and Wednesday night to Monday night. And then life just became one big weekend that I couldn't afford, you know, emotionally or spiritually or physically. You just become this basket case.
Then came the wild animal of heroin.
Yeah. That was the beginning of my second year at university, in and out of bad relationships, and fell into a relationship with a heroin addict with sweet blue eyes. And my friends all said to me, you're going to end up a junkie. And I was like, no, I won't.
You didn't have any hesitation?
I didn't have any hesitation in starting the unhealthy relationship with him. I did have hesitation in starting the heroin because I'd had friends die and I'd been to their funerals and I'd watched people lose their, you know, lose control. And so I thought, well, I don't really want to try that, but I do really like this guy. And I ended up pregnant and back then didn't know God and didn't know the power of life and chose termination. And people don't tell you how guilty you're going to feel or how dark a place that might take you to. And it really was for me the pushing over the edge. And I got so dark that all I could think about was being numb. And I knew that heroin could do that.
You were hooked really quickly, weren't you?
Within 2 weeks of trying heroin, I was using it every day.
How much would that cost you?
When I started, it was anything between $20 and $50 a day, which is still $350 a week.
Sure.
When you're on the dole, or, you know, I was working in a cinema that was barely giving me shifts because they could see me going downward spiral. And, yeah, within the first 6 to 12 months, anything up to $100 or $200 a day.
How'd you get the money?
Sold all my possessions, stole from family and friends, stole from my work. Became the opposite of everything I thought I'd been raised to be.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And then you were fired because you were sprung at work stealing from co-workers.
I was stealing from the... I was selling fake tickets and they found out. And they'd been watching me for ages. And I walked into work one day and my boss said, "We know what you've been doing and we know you've been doing it for a long time and you have two choices." Again, the power of choice. He said, "You can either sit here right now while I call the police and you can go to jail, or you can go to rehab." And I was like, "Oh, I'll go to rehab, promise, promise." And I didn't.
So what happened that day?
I walked out of the cinema thinking to myself, I need the money from the cinema to get the drugs so that my body won't be sick and my mind won't feel like it's going to explode from not having the heroin in my system. And walked out and thought, what can I do? And the only thing that I had left was my body. So I made one phone call to an escort agency and started work that night as a prostitute.
Why did you call them? Of all places where you could go for work, why them?
I didn't think I could do anything else. I knew as a woman that my body was my last asset. I didn't have any possessions. We'd been kicked out of 3 different properties. We didn't, you know, we're kind of almost homeless. And I'd burned my bridges with family and friends, and it was my last thought. The thought of rehab and getting well certainly didn't enter my mind.
Did you have any pause for thought about whether that should be the place where you'd go?
No, I don't know why. You know, still to this day, I think, why did I go home, open the Yellow Pages, look up escort agency, call them and them say yes, and me start work that night?
Yeah, they said start work immediately.
Yeah. She just said, "How old are you?" And I said, 21. She said, "Are you attractive?" I said, "Well, my mum and dad think I am." And she didn't say, "Do you take drugs?" She didn't say, "Do you have any STDs?" She didn't ask me any of those questions. She just said, "Great, come in." So to her, I guess she's thinking fresh meat. And to me, I'm thinking money for heroin.
Without, of course, going into every detail, I wanted to ask you what that night was like for you, considering everything about where you'd come from. What was going on in your head and your heart?
It was a dark and scary place. Like, you're being shown around this illegal brothel in the city of Brisbane, and you don't know how you got here, and you don't kind of want to leave, but you do want to leave, and you're kind of, you know, torn. And then it was just that it was dark, it was scary. I jumped in the shower after my first client and trying to scrub away the shame, and I couldn't. And so I just thought, well, I'll just do that again and again and again. And at the end of the night, I got paid $350, which is 50% of what I'd earned. And they keep the rest. And I went home and I injected, you know, the heroin. The boyfriend shared his portion, of course. And the next day I had to go back because then I'd increased my demand. I had to increase my supply.
Can I ask you this perhaps confronting question? What were the men like that you saw?
Yeah, it's a very valid question. They were all sorts. Young university students through to 89-year-old men, disabled people, fat people, skinny people, smelly people, drunk people, criminals. Just an all sorts bunch. And at the end of the day, humanity is broken. And that's something that I'll never forget, how broken they are.
How long did this last for?
I worked the streets of Brisbane every night for 12 months, in and out of illegal brothels, sometimes on the street. And one of the things that terrifies me is how many young women hear me say that and say, 12 months isn't very long. I mean, you know, you just go to work, you make the money, you put it in the bank. And I just say, 12 seconds is too long. I was somebody's daughter And I wasn't just my mum and dad's daughter. I was a daughter of the king who just didn't know yet. Nobody had told me.
So then came a very confronting visit from your mum. Tell us how that played out.
Yeah, that was, you know, I'll never forget it in my mind. And maybe it's because I do want to make movies and go to Hollywood. I can see it in my mind. And there was a knock at the door, and it wasn't like the knock of the police or a client. It was a gentle knock. And I opened the door, and it was my mum. And I was dressed like a prostitute, and I was 41 kilograms. And at that stage was using up to $1,000 worth of heroin a day and having to do the work to get the money to get the drugs. And I opened the door, and my mum's crying her eyes out. And she just looked at me and she said, "You're not the girl we raised you to be." And there was no guilt, no condemnation, just love. And I hadn't known that love for a long time because I'd avoided her and my dad and just decided if they can't hear me stoned on drugs on the phone, then I just won't call them. That's their problem. And here's this mum sitting in this lounge room of this illegal brothel looking at her baby girl who's 21 years old and thinking that she's all that, and I wasn't. And it was a confronting visit. She ended it by leaving not very long later, saying, "Here's our phone number if you want to get help, you know, call us." And she just looked at me and she raised in me a question of identity, which is, I say, identity is the power tool. It's where it all comes from. Who am I, you know? And she looked at me and she said, "I want you to start to ask yourself, who am I?" And that very quickly became, who am I? How did I get here?
So how long was it from when that visit from your mum took place to when you kind of changed?
I left the prostitution about 8 weeks later, and that was 8 weeks of hearing my mum's voice in my head haunting me. Who are you? And what are you doing here? And I ran away from prostitution, which is, you know, a dark life. There's, you know, gangsters and bikie gangs and drug dealers and pimps, and it's not a pretty place. And I ran away from it, just little old me with one handbag, and left everything that I knew, and went and stayed with a friend. Detoxed for 5 days, and when the drugs left my system, the guilt and shame entered my system. And after 5 days, tried to kill myself and injected $800 worth of heroin in one go, and should very well and truly be dead a few times over. And then when I woke up from trying to kill myself, I thought, you know what, now I'm such a loser, I can't even kill myself. And then a journey for about nearly 2 years between leaving prostitution and actually making a step away from drugs and away from life controlling issues.
We're with Bronwyn Healy on Open House. In just a moment, the amazing transformation that's brought Bronwyn from there to today with three beautiful children and the founder of the remarkable life transforming Hope Foundation. We'll speak briefly with another former prostitute who quite literally found hope. In just a moment. Across Australia, this is Open House. On Open House Across Australia, we're with Bronwyn Healy. It is an amazing story, Bronwyn. Tell me the big change point, the big turning point, transformation for you.
I got to a place where I was injecting anything that I could find, and my mum walked in on me in the bathroom at a friend's place, and she just looked at me and she's like, "You're a mess. Like, you've been using these drugs for 6 years. You need to get help." And I found a doctor in Brisbane who treated drug addicts, and by that stage, after 6 years, I thought I had, you know, a problem with drugs. And I went to visit him, and I sat in the surgery and waited, as you do. And I finally got in there, and he just looked at me and he said, "Tell me your drug history." And I did, which I thought was my problem, the drug history. And didn't think of all the root issues and the underlying issues and the issues that had stemmed from the drug use. And he looked at me after I'd rattled off all of these drug history, and he just looked at me and he said, "Your problem isn't drugs." And I'm thinking, whatever, like, yes, it is.
Yes.
And he looked at me and he said, "Your problem is you have a hole in your soul only Jesus can fill." And I was like, okay, crazy man.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me and he said, "You know, it's a deep internal issue, and it's something that you can't just stop taking drugs and change, and you need to go to rehab, and it's going to take time, and it's going to be a journey." And I was like, I don't like the word time, and I don't like the word journey. And I fairly colourfully told him what I thought he could do with his concept of what he thought my problems were. And 3 days later, I found myself in rehab. And God's bigger than me. And
So what happened in rehab then?
Yeah, it was a Christian-run support home that I didn't know was Christian. And so I signed the contract and I commit to it. And the first night they're like, come to our prayer meeting. And I was like, I don't think so. And they did alpha classes and we had to go to church. And I stood outside church at the glass doors and smoked cigarettes and blew the smoke in the window just to annoy them. And I was fairly nasty, fairly angry at the world. If I'd have thought there was a God, I would have been angry at him. And I was angry at me. And one Sunday after I'd been in rehab 6 weeks and not used heroin and thought to myself, I can do this. This is awesome. I haven't used heroin and that's what it's all about. These Christians think they can, you know, I need to fill the hole in my soul. I don't. I'm not using drugs. This is awesome. I've made it. One Sunday it was pouring rain. I had no choice but to go inside the church building and don't remember making a conscious decision to walk to the front and surrender my life. You know, it wasn't like a sweet, you know, soft, holy moment. I stood up the front of the church, basically in my head and my heart and out of my mouth saying, okay, God, if what they say about you is true and you can forgive me and heal me and restore me and redeem me, I dare you to take me. And I didn't realize he'd been waiting for me my whole life and that he loved me before I had the choice to love him.
How did he do that?
For me, it was an instant deliverance from drug addiction. Like I literally, from that moment forward, have never pursued drugs or alcohol again. And from then, that moment forward, I realized he was calling me to some form of leadership to show other people the way. And I was like, I've been saved like 3 seconds, just hold on a minute. And then within 2 weeks, everyone in the rehab was saved. And I thought to myself, something's going on here. And it was the power of story. They'd seen me throw things at the people that ran the house. They'd seen me punch people in the face. They'd seen me rant and rave and swear and try and rip up Bibles that I couldn't. And they just thought, you know, it was a bit like when Saul became Paul. People were like, what is going
on? Who's this? How do you account for such a radical transformation? I mean, it's total 360 degrees.
I guess all I know is that God's really big and I'm really small and without him I'm nothing.
Then came the Hope Foundation.
Yeah, years later.
You founded it.
Yep.
What does it do? And why does it do what it does?
The Hope Foundation, basically, we call it a global organisation that's based in Brisbane. And through the power of the internet, it has actually become that. And we're an organisation that journeys alongside women. We say we come alongside women wanting a life change from addiction and or the sex industry. And we find that most women in the sex industry, or about 92%, have some kind of addiction issues. And if they didn't have them when they got there, they have them once they're there. And we basically love them with the love that we've been loved with. And we do peer mentor support and we have a small group and we have an online group and we send out care packages and we have Valentine's Day and Christmas in July outreaches. And we basically pour out the love of God over them at every given opportunity.
Do you have a Christian agenda to convert them?
No, we don't. They normally end up there by choice.
But it is an important point to make.
Absolutely.
That's not what you're on about necessarily.
No. And so that means that we send, you know, we can send flowers to brothels or we can meet women on the street and give them love heart chocolates. And our core message is you are loved, valued and created with a purpose. And we pray that over every woman that is in contact with us. And once they start to grasp the loved part, because most of them have been loved in an unhealthy way, then they start to realize that they're valued. And then they start to realize there's a purpose for their life and there's a purpose for their pain and there's a purpose for their mess and that this God can heal and restore and redeem. And when you get a bunch of the Hope Chicks in a room, like God shows up and you hear them talk to each other, you know, and they'll be like, don't you hear Bronwyn? She says, what I did is not who I am. Don't you know that what you've done is not who you are? Don't you know that your past is not your future? Come on, babe, get over it. And it's the most phenomenal, you know, I say it, mate, the life that I get to live now makes my whole life make sense.
Bronwyn, there are so many women the Hope Foundation has helped, and I thought it would be a good idea to speak briefly with one of them tonight to see how this has played out in their lives for such good. And Leonie is on the line. Hi, Leonie.
Hi, Lee.
Thanks very much for joining us tonight.
That's all right.
Can I ask you where you were when you first, I think, quite literally encountered Hope?
Yeah. Well, I'll just tell you a little bit before that. A lot of bad things happened to me in my childhood, including sexual abuse, and that gave me a lot of issues and a lot of pain. And I did a lot of things to numb the pain that started in my mid-teens, like drugs and alcohol, and I began to self-harm and developed anorexia and bulimia. And after school, I did a BA in psychology, a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, to try and fix myself, but that didn't fix me at all. And things just got worse, and I ended up in my second domestic violence relationship, and I had an abortion. And within less than 2 weeks after having that abortion, I was working in a brothel as a prostitute.
Can I ask how old you were?
27.
And how long did that life continue for you?
4 years.
Until you found the Hope Foundation?
That's right.
How did that happen?
Well, in the prostitution, it's like a vicious cycle. You do it and it's so soul-destroying that whatever your the substances you're using, you tend to rely on them even more and more heavily. And so the addictions got worse, and it got to the point in 2007 where my health declined so much, and I had 4 hospital detoxes off alcohol, and I found myself in my second rehab. I went to the first one, which was a non-Christian one, and after 3 days I ran away because I just knew that they had nothing that could help me there, that what they were doing wouldn't fix me. But then in the second rehab, shortly in, on Valentine's Day in 2008, all the women got taken up to Brisbane. The rehab I went to was on the Gold Coast, and they took us up to Brisbane. And I walked in a little red mini dress and the black stilettos that I used to sew my body in. And pretty much as soon as I walked over the threshold, I was blinking back tears. I was just struck and overwhelmed by the love that was tangible in the room. And they just lavished me with gifts and beautiful meal and pampered me. And then Brahman got up to tell her story and how she'd been in addiction and been a prostitute and how she'd found Jesus and found freedom. And I was, like, sitting there at the dinner table just hoping that none of the other girls would see me blinking back tears because I was so ashamed of my prostitution background. I couldn't believe that Bowman was so bold to stand up there and talk about it, but I'm so glad she did, because after that dinner I walked over to her and the words just tumbled from my mouth, "I need God." And so pretty much right then and there we prayed the salvation prayer, and I asked Jesus into my heart and to be Lord of my life, and that began a journey of freedom and hope. And within weeks I quit smoking, which I'd done for on and off for 16 years. I stopped swearing, which I'd done pretty much every second word was a swear word, and I went off antidepressants within months, and I'd been told that I'd be on them for the rest of my life. I'd been on them off and on for 12 years. I stopped climbing the walls with my addiction. I stopped wanting it every minute. It was like minute by minute before I met God that I wanted to take something to numb the pain, and that stopped happening. And God just really took a hold of me, and I was hungry for him like there was no tomorrow. And I finished rehab and then went to Bible college full time for a year. And then I went over to the Philippines and worked in an orphanage for a month. And I've never been back to the sex industry, and now I'm working in a legitimate job, which Hope helped me get. And Brahma and Hope, they've just been with me through thick and thin. They've saved my life. They've supported me. They've given me friendship and clothes and food and helped me heal from the massive soul destruction that happens in the sex industry. They've given me counsel and advice whenever I've asked. They've given me all the Christian resources that I want. And believe me, I wanted a lot because I was hungry for God. And they gave me prayer covering and answered my individual prayer requests. And yeah, they've been with me through the journey, like not just a one-off, and I think I probably would have fallen without that. And they've mentored me and just helped me grow in whatever way they could.
Leonie, thanks so much for joining us. Bronwyn Healy, you have had the most amazing life and the most amazing transformation in your life. Could I end by asking you this? The way you've reached out to these women in Hope, and especially Acceptance, I think, Christian or not, it strikes me that what you do and what you say extends to many people in the midst of hard stuff in life, whether it's in prostitution or not. What would you say to them tonight?
I say where there's a heartbeat, there's hope. Don't ever lose sight of the fact that you're still alive, there's a purpose for your life, and that you yourself, right where you are, and it doesn't matter where you are loved, you are valued, and you are created with a purpose by a big, wild, untamed, magnificently loving God who's waiting patiently, thankfully, for me and you, and passionately for you to choose him. And even if you don't, he still waits. He just loves. He is love, and love will always win.
It's a great story, and I'm honoured to have heard it and spoken with you tonight. Bronwyn Healy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Across Australia, this is Open House.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.